Okay, this is really very important topic. Right? The name of the topic was Man and Woman, the Ultimate Relationship, semicolon, the Unique Role of the Man. Hmm. So now, a lot of times the class, you know, titles of classes are just there for promotional, PR, right? But they don't really reflect what the topic really is. And both parts of our topic, really, we are going to talk about why it is that man and woman is the ultimate relationship, and we're going to talk about the unique role of the man. So it really does reflect what it's all about. In general, there are a few ways in a seminar like this that we could speak about relationships, and a few ways that you've been hearing about relationships, right? On one hand, a person, we have to be like practical. You have to take advice from whoever has intelligent advice, and that advice has to relate to us in January 2014. Someone doesn't understand where people are at today, so their advice is almost always going to be a little bit off. And to follow the dictate of the Rambam, Maimonides, we have to hear the truth from who says it, right? Whether it's man, woman, Jew, non-Jew, it doesn't make a difference, right? Everybody has a part of the Jew. That's the Rambam. The great Rambam said, Shema ha'emes mimish amra. Hear the truth from he that utters it, right? And like I said, John Gottman, one of the sources, if you remember, that idea of contempt, spoke about Rabbi Salanter's four horsemen, but it also included the word contempt. That was a totally secular source. Gottman himself happens to be Jewish, but he's not looking at things from a Jewish perspective. He's just studying marriage. Okay? So for sure, and I imagine a lot of what you know you got over this time was a lot of practical, good, strong advice about how to go. But in a Torah-based seminar like this, we have to add another component, which was also added, is to go a little past the sociological world of January 2014. Right, what do I mean? This is a very important point. Torah, when we talk about Torah, we were talking about the other day at lunch what Torah is. Torah doesn't just define reality, it creates reality. I'll say that again. Torah doesn't just define reality, it creates reality. Our rabbis tell us, Istakel ba'orais u'bar alma. That translates to God looked into the Torah and he created the world. Catch that? He looked into the Torah and he created the world. If there's light in the world, it's because the Torah says there should be light. It wasn't that there's light and now Torah is reflecting that reality and explaining that reality. Torah created the reality, right? If a person speaks, it's because God said, Ve'yi Adam lenefesh chaya, and man should be a living soul. Living soul means that he has the ability to speak. We speak because the Torah says we speak. Huh? It's an amazing thing, and it changes our whole perspective of what we learn from the Torah, and it explains to us why the Torah is totally different than every other book and every other book of wisdom. Right? There are wise books in the world, no question about it. Man has a tremendous amount of knowledge. Our rabbis tell us, Chochma begoyim ta'amin. If they tell you that there's wisdom amongst the nations, believe it. There's certainly wisdom among the nations. But no book, person, scholar, as smart as they may be, as worldly as they may be, as studied as they may be, as erudite as they may be, creates reality. Only the Torah creates reality, right? So when we're talking about Torah's lessons, we're talking about something way, way, way past, way deeper than January 2014. We're talking eternal principles, which will always be true because the God and the Torah that defined reality is the one who created them. Yeah, I want to show you how far this concept goes. One of the greatest rabbis of modern times. We spoke about Rabbi Salanter. This is Rabbi Salanter's rabbi. Right, Rabbi Salanter's rabbi. The Vilna Gaon. Heard of him? The Gra. Sure. The famed Gaon, Rabbi Elio in Vilna. Not so far from the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. I mean, closer to Ukraine than United States or Israel, right? But in Vilnius.
Yeah.
Vilna. Lithuania was so small, the flag of Lithuania used to have a rider on its back legs. That was the flag of Lithuania. And they said the reason he's on his back legs is because he puts his front legs down, he's going to go out of the country.
Yeah.
So Lithuania was a small country, and it had, relatively speaking, a small capital called Vilna. But that capital called Vilna was this Jewish center in the world. And one of the rabbis used to say, there's a different map. The map of the world, Paris is big, and London is big, etc. In the Jewish map, so where the Chavetz Chaim, where our great rabbi is in Radin, that's a big map, and where the Mir Yeshiva is, that's the capital, and Vilna is the capital. Vilna, no one knows, who cares about Vilna? But to us, Vilna is the capital. You say, anybody Vilna? Did you see the Vilna going? Did you see his... So anyway, so he said like this, listen to this statement. He said, everything that will ever happen in all of mankind, and all of the creation, and all the... for each individual creation. And everything that happens to it is hinted at in the Torah. That means the fact that we're talking right now, me, Gabriel, and Vlad, is written, hopefully Michelle soon, is written in the Torah somehow. Not explicit. You read the Torah a million times and we won't find it. We don't have the computer program good enough to find it, but it's in there. It's all hinted at in different ways, jumping letters and going backwards and forwards. It's all hinted at. All wisdom that is somehow hinted in the Torah. So we're talking about a heavy book. So that means that when we're talking about marriage from a Torah perspective, we're talking about the inner meaning of it all. As opposed to just looking at sociological reality, which we have to learn from. That was my introduction. We have to know who we are. We live in a real world, right? In a world with lots of parts of it. We live in the world of January 2014. Yeah, but to draw from Jewish wisdom, we're drawing from something much, much, much deeper, and much, much more basic, and much more real, ultimately, because it's a reality which goes on forever. Okay, that's introduction number one. Now, I call this class.
Yeah, but that's a heavy.
That's a heavy idea.
No, it's a heavy. It's heavy. What's the proper word? It's a heavy proposition. I mean, you can't just basically say that without proving it. It's like
right.
Because it's in the board. You can see it. Okay,
right.
Can say whatever.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're absolutely. I'm not proving it, for sure. I'm not proving it at this point. You're right. I'm not proving it. I'm just telling you that's how.
I'm not disproving it.
Yeah, I understand. I agree with you. I agree with you. That for sure. This is definitely an Orthodox belief. Definitely. It's just that I'm not proving it. We'd have to prove it. But, based on our sources, assuming that our sources are true and that they're passed down, it's part of the tradition, etc., this is how Torah is viewed. The Quran isn't viewed like that. They won't say that about the Quran, right? I don't think they'll say it's the blueprint of creation. It was created after creation. You see what I'm saying? They don't make such a claim. Okay. But that is a true point. So anyway, so I called this class the ultimate relationship, because it's the prototype of so many other relationships. And I'm going to explain that. And you're going to see why there's something we could speak about with men and not necessarily with women. Shir HaShirim is the biblical Song of Songs, right? Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs. So I have it here. So this is what Jewish people read on Passover. Mm-hmm. Passover night we read it, and on Shabbos, on Passover we read this. So this is the ultimate love story of God and the Jewish people. I'll just read you a few verses, but they all have this type of sense. This is the third paragraph. As I lay in my bed in the night of my desert travail, I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but I found him not, for he maintained his aloofness. I resolved to arise then and roam through the city in the streets and squares, that through Moses I would seek him whom my soul loved. I sought him, but I found him not. They, the watchmen patrolling the city, found me. You have seen him whom my soul loves? What has he said? Scarcely had I departed from them when I found him whom my soul loves. Until I found him that I love. I grasped him, and I didn't let go until he brought me to my mother's house and into the room of my parents. Okay, that, you hear the tone of the verses, and Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, is a very famous work. Okay, so this is God, and this is the Jewish people. That's for sure. This is all a parable for an higher level wisdom. It's not part of the Bible, a love story. Right? Love story is for other books. Right? The Bible isn't about a love story, but it is about a love story. And the rabbis tell us that if all the books are holy, Shir HaShirim, the Song of Songs, is the holiest of the holy. So it's very, very holy. Anyway, it's all hints and very mystical, etc. So now, I want to ask you, God, Jewish people, right? Being referred to as a man and a woman. It clearly talks about being physical parts in the Shir HaShirim. Now, who do you think is God, the man, or is God the woman? What do you say?
Man.
God's the man, right? I think if I had to ask your wives, they'd also say that God is the man. Now, when I was thinking something else. We always refer to God in which tense, the masculine or the feminine? Male, he, right? We never call him she. Right. Right? No Bible calls him she. Even as secondly as you want to get. I mean, maybe they do. I don't know. But if they do, they all know they're perverting the truth. They're perverting it. God is a man. Now, God is not a man. God is not man. He's not feminine. God forbid. God is beyond our concepts. We're not giving a class on philosophy here, but we understand that really, when it comes to his ultimate essence, we don't even have a name for him, right? Can you catch that? We don't really have a name. God, what does God mean? Even the names that it's written, right, don't really represent his real essence. His essence is undefinable. When you try to define him, you're only detracting from it. He's beyond definition. We know how he acts. Adam chachan chavlori sicha, but I haven't seen you. Him shilucha barov chasyonos, hincha echa b'choldim yonot. We can only come to get some sense about how he acts to us. But what his real essence is, like, Gabriel, you're looking at me, right, I'm looking at you. There's a lot more to you than meets the eye. There's more than me that meets the eye. There's more than Vlad that meets the eye. God, all we know is how we act. All we know is we present. And that's just a little parable. We don't really understand God ultimately. Okay, that's just a side point. But as much as we can refer to God, we're certainly going to refer to him in the masculine. We all agree to that? Now why is that though? Why don't we talk about God in the feminine? Huh? Any other question?
I always thought, it sense to me, that the main reason for that is that because in relation to him, we are so feminine.
Good. Excellent. And let's go right. In relation to him, it must be that we're feminine. Mm-hmm. Excellent. That's a perfect way to say Gabriel, as I understand, right? It's not that God is ultimately male, but in the relationship, we're the female and he's the male. Okay, now let's try to sharpen that idea exactly. We're going down your path. I want to introduce two words of discussion. In Hebrew, they're called mashpia umekabel. He who gives and he who receives. Okay? Mm-hmm. He who gives and he who receives. The giver and the receiver. So in using those two words, giver, receiver, who's the giver, who's the receiver?
God is the giver.
God's the giver, the receiver. Yeah. He gives us life, existence, wisdom, financial success, and we receive. Boy, do we receive. And what do we give him? What can we give him? Right? Impossible. He is ultimate perfection, ultimate reality. We say in Hebrew, the verse tells us, Ein ol milvado, there is nothing but him. There's nothing but him. Ultimately, our whole reality is something which we have to really understand philosophically. I like to say, you know, before a person's religious, he doesn't understand how God knows everything. When he becomes religious, he doesn't really understand how he exists. Understand? If you go into Jewish philosophy enough, you don't understand. That reminds me of a story. May I digress to a story about a Hasidic rabbi, Lublin. Where's Lublin in relationship to the Ukraine?
Lublin. Not sure. I think it's somewhere in Ukraine.
It is in Ukraine. Might be in Ukraine. Yeah. It's not in Ukraine. Just a little bit close. Anyway, Lublin is a city in Poland. I think in Ukraine, Poland. But anyway, so there's a great rabbi named the Choza of Lublin, the Seer of Lublin.
Well, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah. Ukraine and Poland, you can look at that as one country, been always like going back and forth, right, and right. Cutting into pieces.
So right. Exactly. Right.
So yeah, right. Like you said, you know, right. Poland is Ukraine, and right. Lublin is, you know.
So you have the Choza of Lublin. It's called the Seer of Lublin. They say he had Ruach Kodesh. He had the divine inspiration. He could see things that no one knew. Anyway, so someone came to this rabbi and said, you know what, rabbi? I'm good with God. I believe in him and stuff like that. One thing I can't understand, how does God know what I'm thinking? I just can't. How does he know what I'm thinking? Like, how does he gets in there? I'm thinking something. God knows it, right? But how does he know it? This is what he asked this rabbi. This rabbi said, good question. Go to Lublin. Go to the Choza of Lublin. Go to the Seer of Lublin. You're going to get your answer. Well, he's very excited. Right? Takes his pack. Gets on the wagon. Travels the whole way, gets to Lublin, doesn't say a word to the Rebbe. The Rebbe's looking down. He looks up and he says, if I know, you don't think he knows? Yeah. If I know, you don't think he knows? He can read minds. Okay. Anyway, so we have to understand that we can't give God anything. We can't give God anything. At least we could try our best, but we're not really ever giving back to him. That's what it means to be perfect. Perfect means you can't give back to him. Now,
how about this? Sorry, yeah. I wanted to grasp it. Nope. I always thought that the only thing that we can give him, in fact, is a praise. Because he can't praise himself.
We're not really giving him that, but that would, see, that's philosophically, that can't be, because that would mean he's lacking. See? We never, anything, if I need your praise, that means because I'm lacking without your praise. Or let's say a person who's, we spoke about ego that day, someone who's egoless, can you give him praise? Not really, because it's meaningless to him, praise, because he doesn't need it. I like praise because I have an ego, so it makes me feel good. But if I would need it, that means my needing it means I'm imperfect. A perfect being can't need anything. You hear it?
I hear it, but
yeah,
there have been moments in history when God has become angry with us, you know, the golden calf and various other opportunities. So there is something that he wants from us. Not, I wouldn't say need, but that he wants from the Jewish
want,
people.
Want is a good word. Yeah. Right.
To the extent that somebody wants something, there is some. Again, it's very difficult. You know, I don't want to use words, but we're so limited in language.
Good.
If you say
right.
black, you say meat. If you,
good.
You fall into
right.
this trap
excellent.
Again.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Right.
But notwithstanding, there would. Is there nothing?
We don't say. Well, the only thing we will ever say. First, you're asking a great question, and you're dealing with exactly the right words. We're never going to say he's lacking something. He created a system where he wants something, and it looks as if we're giving him something, but we're not ultimately giving him anything. That's the short answer. But we'd have to learn a lot more sources to deal with it. But it's a deep question. It's a good question. But philosophically, that's what I understand. As much as God is perfect, we don't give him anything. So therefore, he's the ultimate giver, and we're the ultimate taker. Jews and the nations of the world. Who's the giver? Who's the taker? Jews and the nations of the world. Who's the giver? Who's the taker?
Well, Greece is taker.
What?
Greece is taker.
Right? So we're called beautiful, a light to the nations, right? Our job, ultimately, is to give direction to the world, right? Now, the fact that an exile, dispersed, persecuted people, that's only 0.2%, that's 1 in 500, that's our number, 0.2%, had such an effect on the world. 22% of Fields Awards. Fields Awards is the highest award in mathematics, given once every 4 years. Won by who? Jews. 25% of Nobel Prizes, won by who? Jews. A whopping 51% of Pulitzer Prizes, right? The highest award in literature, won by Jews, right? And more important, 2.5 billion people believe in some form of monotheism because of a Jew, right? Because of Abraham. And with monotheism, what comes with it? Ultimate morality, right? There's a teacher here named Ken Spiro. He has a whole book called World Perfect. You read the book? See the book?
I met him.
You met us. Yeah, he's great. So his whole book is about the fact of how much the world back then was lacking. We think, oh, the Greeks, the Romans, they were such high cultures, you know? Greeks left babies on mountains to die for sex selection and for overpopulation. Can you imagine such a thing? Overpopulation. Very good. You have a daughter, put her on a hill. Can you imagine such a thing? Who taught the world that that's not there? And who can prove that's not there? The Nazis think they're right. Hitler said, I'm coming to unshackle mankind from two shackles that the Jew has put on him. One on his body, right? Brit Milah, the circumcision, and one on his soul, the conscience. He thought he was right. I've read a lot of books about the Holocaust. They said, we are coming to an act for mankind. They will praise our actions one day. They'll all wake up. That's what they thought. Socialism, whatever they call it, National Socialism. Right? Can you imagine? So who tells us that there's not such a thing? Belief in one God does it. Anyway, this is a whole separate class again. But the point is to understand that the Jews' role in the world is for us to have hashpa. We're the mashpiim on the world. We're the ones coming to give a picture to the world, give a sense to the world, teach them what it's all about. That's really ultimately what we're supposed to do. You know who knew this? Dr. Mengele, to quote a Nazi, right? The famed doctor of Auschwitz, angel of death of Auschwitz. He turned to a nurse one time and he said, there are only really two players in the world scene, us and the Jews. That's it.
Us Germans,
which is also a deep thing about Amalek.
Right.
That's
what he.
Us and the Jews. Yeah. That's a quoted thing. I didn't read it not in a Jewish book. I read it in a secular. Us and the Jews, right? That's a lot of the Purim story, but touching on also a bigger topic. What the us was, you know. But it's interesting. Amalek specifically came to the Jews and they tried to do homosexuality on the Jews, which also relates to this whole thing. They wanted to turn things around and make us the Nekeva. But anyway, that's a deep conversation for another. Heaven and earth. Oh, let's think about that. Who's the mashpia? Who's the giver and who's the taker? Heavens and the earth.
Heaven clearly the giver.
Heaven is the taker.
Heaven's the taker. How's heaven the taker?
Heaven's
the giver.
Heaven's the giver. Heaven's the taker. What do you say?
Well, once you leave earth, you go to heaven, right?
It's interesting, but I mean, I'm talking about the physical heavens we see. Right, usually the rain is coming. Right? Right, the rains are coming. So we see that as the mashpiim, and the earth is receiving the land, receiving the rain, receiving the sustenance, and from there grows things. Right, if sustenance doesn't come from above, so then there's nothing for the ground to work with. A teacher and students, who's the giver, who's the taker?
Teacher is giver.
Teacher, I want to tell you one thing, and listen, please listen well to this. If you run into teachers, yeah, rabbis, it's very important that in a teaching relationship that it goes two ways. Teachers receive a lot from their students, yeah? They receive love, they receive support, etc. Lots of apples, you know? But if your rabbi or your teacher is looking more to the relationship as a way for him to get than you to get, avoid that person. Those are unhealthy people. Rabbis like that are unhealthy because they don't understand that their job is to be giving. My job here is to give to you, not to take from you. Right. If I see myself as I can get a salary, I cannot get a salary. That's something you need to get. But ultimately, I have to see myself. Do you know what the Gemara tells us? Mani b'chinim afatem b'chinim. God taught us for free. Ultimately, a rabbi is supposed to teach for free. What can you do? You have to live, right? Otherwise, I'd be a lawyer, I'd be a doctor, so I have to take a little bit of money. But that reflects the whole relationship. The relationship is for you, not for me. I know rabbis, you know, not a many, I'm just saying, I know that they so psychologically intertwine with their students, and they're so dependent on the students' feelings towards them that they're bad rabbis.
But I thought there was something that said that, you know, I learn more from my students.
That's very good. That's a good, that's a question. But still, it means I still learn a tremendous amount from my students, but the relationship has to be still focused the other way. Yeah, we have to figure out how to, that is an excellent question, that's a correct question. I was worried someone would ask me that. I don't know exactly how to answer it. But I'm still pretty sure that's a beautiful question. You see what I'm saying? You have to know. Like that's a lot of rabbis. There are rabbis that get mixed up in that, because there is a two-way relationship, and all the relationships we say are really two ways in a certain sense. Jews get nothing from the nations. Maybe they do get a certain something, right? Or the earth gives something to the heavens, right? But there's an ultimate way things can be. So we see this giver taker thing going all through the creations. God, Jewish people, rabbis, students, heaven, earth, eight nations of the world, Jews, finally men and women. This shows men and women is the ultimate example of a giver and a taker in a certain way, right? Where do we see that? Even in the love act that's so represented. Understand that. The fact that the love act works the way it works and God set it up in that way shows us something about the whole relationship. The man is the giver, right? That's Zachar. In Hebrew, even you call things that. Zachar to the Nekeva. Even, you know, all parts are referred to Zachar and Nekeva. Man and woman. The fact that the love act goes that way shows us how the relationship is supposed to go. A man's job is to be mashpia, to give over to his wife, and the wife's job is to be makabel and to receive from the man. And then she takes it and she develops it and something comes out from it. But he's the one, so to speak, starting things. The Gemara tells us the way of a man is to go after a woman. That's the way. A woman is not supposed to ask, you know, openly for physical relations. It's always supposed to be going that way. We'll explain a little bit more. So you're all saying to yourselves, oh, you know, but I receive so much from my wife, her love, her kindness, right? Very often her financial support could be, you know, right, you know, different points in life. A wife makes a lot more money than a husband. Well, men don't necessarily like that, but it definitely could be that a wife is making more money than a husband, depending on her success and his success and what she wanted to do with her life, and what he wanted to do with her life, right? So it's true. But like I just like I said, like students and rabbis is a good example. But ultimately, see what I'm saying? Ultimately, the direction of the relationship in Torah, and I understand why I don't want to speak to women about this. You know, I said you can't say this to ladies. They'll throw you out of the window, right? But right, the students give a lot to the teachers, right? But ultimately, the rabbi has to see himself as he's the giver. And ultimately, in a relationship, we the men have to see ourselves as the givers to the wives, not the takers. We get a lot from our wives. We should get a lot from our wives. Our wives are supposed to give to us, right? But ultimately, here's a good example. Let's say a child, a father, a parent, children, right? Who's the givers? Who's the takers there? Why does, you know, one of our great rabbis, Rabbi Dessler, says, why is it that parents love children more than children love parents? Right, this might come as a shock to you, right? But ultimately, parents love children more than children love parents. Why? So Rabbi Dessler says, he says, because the parents give, and their job is to give, and the thing you give to is what you love. Right. But we see that the basic definition of the parent to the child is that the child is receiving from a parent financial support, love, guidance, everything, right? Later in life, when the parent is not able to move around, so the child has to give back to the parents. And again, of course, it's reciprocal. It's not like the kids never give anything to the parents. But we all understand that the ultimate focus of that relationship has to be from the father to the son, to give, to teach, to help out, to give financial aid to. And a parent, the same way, a parent who's... Any of you have married children? right? A parent who's, my son got married 7 months ago, a parent whose focus is to receive is going to be a bad parent. You're going to make mistakes. You know, one of the rabbis said, where did the generation gap from? Generation gap come from? My son the doctor. That's such a deep thing. The generation gap came from my son the doctor. Because what does this my son the doctor mean? It means I don't see him for himself. I see him as a nachas machine, as a machine to give me pleasure, right? He'll be a doctor, and then I will get honor from that. You know, me, the immigrant from Poland, from Ukraine, from Lithuania, from Yemen, from where we're from, right? I'm going to get honor from my kid. He made it in the American way. Now he gives me honor. You know the joke, the first Jewish president, huh? Gets up to speak. He stands up, you know. He's not religious. His mother his Jewish mother's sitting there. He says, she turns to the guy next to him. You see that guy speaking? You see him? Yeah? He says, his brother's a doctor. Right. His brother's a doctor.
So if you were to sort of define giver,
yeah.
Would it be someone who doesn't, for lack of a better word, doesn't need the other person, I wouldn't say that.
You can't really stand on your own, like you've been learning that you're not. Well, let's go on a little bit and re-ask that question. When I give the examples, I think it's hard to give an exact definition in this context because we're not full without our wives,
right?
That's part of it. Right. But I'm gonna talk about that. And if the question, ask it again in 10 minutes, okay? But this is very important. See, this is what I meant. This was my, you missed the introduction, Michelle, but that's what I was just giving you a context. that we have to, it radically changes things, as I'm about to explain, when we can see ourselves like that. My job, of course I receive much from my wife, and my wife gives me tremendous amounts. My wife is my best friend. In a certain way, she's my only friend, you know. I'm a busy guy, you know. I don't have time to, like, catch up with people. I'm working all the time and learning when I'm not working and whatever. I'm always busy, you know. But I spend so much time on my wife, and I love her. She gives me so much advice. My wife gives me, a very, very smart lady. She gives a lot of advice and things like ideas. But still, I'd say ultimately, in the relationship, it's my job to take care of her. It's not her job to take care of me. It's my job to take care of them. I get tremendous, and thank God I have good kids, you know? I get tremendous pleasure from them. But ultimately, my job isn't to get pleasure from them. My job is to teach them. My job is to take care of them. All right, I'm going to make it a little clearer as we go. And a man, as much as that's our nature, and that's the nature that the Torah gave us, so it's deeply embedded to us, in us, that we want to be that person for her, and we want to be the giver, right? And if we're not fulfilling that, we feel lacking deep down. On the one hand, it's very nice. Imagine a person that all he's getting is from his wife, getting, gives nothing. So on the one hand, it's a very convenient life. Look, I'm just receiving, you know, in this way and that way and all the different ways, right? But deep down, we feel rotten by that. We don't feel we're fulfilling our potential. We don't feel we're who we should be, okay? And I want to add 2 points to that. It's very interesting. The Gemara tells us that everything in the world was created Zachar and Nekeva. Everything in the world is created male and female. Very interesting. I don't know how far that goes, but this concept that we gave 5 examples of it, heaven, earth, Jewish people, nation of the world, God, Jewish people, students, rabbis, man, woman, everything in the world has that parallel. So you see how basic, that's why I call it the ultimate relationship. We are the prototype, man and woman, the prototype of ultimate relationship. And one other thing I wanted to add from the Talmud, a statement, which I know you guys have heard this week, that the Gemara and Yevamos tells us that we aren't really considered a full man until we have a wife. Right? You heard that one? I think your wife quoted that. Anna quoted that yesterday. We're only called a full man when we have a wife. In our terms, what does that mean? That we are only complete when we are givers. You hear how that translates to that? Yeah? And it's not just two same people coming together, and I'm only complete when I have that half, like we say half. Right. This is a deeper way to look at us, not just the half. That's also a true way to look half, right? But I am a giver to my wife when she's a receiver, and only then am I a really full person when I am in the mode of giving to somebody else. If that's my job in the relationship, ultimately to be a giver. You hear it? Only then am I really a man. I'm a man when I'm a giver. And when a man, when I have a constant person that I'm giving to, that's when I'm a man. Okay? So what? Why am I telling you all this? Well, let's get practical. Contempt. We only a we if we avoid the we's, right? Remember that one? Winning? Mm-hmm. No, so well, that's the press. So I want to show you. You know what? So what? So everything. It needs comes out that the man needs to have a real focus on giving, and a certain way a woman has to have a real focus on being a good receiver. So I'm not talking to the woman. We're not going to worry about what it means to be a good receiver. But can you hear there's a good receiver and a bad receiver? We hear that, right? A good receiver, a bad receiver. So just like there's a good receiver and a bad receiver, there's a good giver and a bad giver. So I want to give 7 or 8 different things which I think come out from this. I think the whole idea, what Gabriel was asking before, will be a little bit clearer as we give examples. You have to have what to give, right? Be the person your wife can look up to and believe she can get good things from you, right? If I'm a teacher and I have nothing to give over, and I'm just saying the same things again and again, repeating the same jokes, saying the same stories, the same divrei Torah, and I'm not growing, so I'm not going to be such a good rabbi because my job is to be a giver. If I'm a taker, then I don't have to have too much, right? I don't have to have too much. You have to be a learner. You have to be interested. You have to read. You have to share ideas with your wife. She wants, deep in her, is the idea of receiving. So she wants to hear your ideas. She doesn't always present that because we have a lot of layers. We're going to talk about that in a few moments. We have a lot of layers that are covering that up. But just like it's deep in us to give, it's deep in us to receive, and her to receive from us. So you have to be someone, one, who has what to give. Okay, two. Point number two, you have to give what's needed. And here I turn to fertility issues. Give what's needed. Do you know that sometimes the fertility issues, none of us should know from those, happen to a man because he has too much sperm, too much zera. That's an interesting thing. You ever in a class, I mean, that Gabriel's been saying this about the seminar a little bit, right? When there's too much being thrown at you, I have a friend who can quote 120 sources. You know, so on the one hand, it's like an awesome intellectual experience to hear him. On the other hand, I can't walk out without anything. He just, just let the bookshelf fall on my head. Same type of experience, you understand? When you give too much in a certain way without thinking and without focusing, so then the receiver cannot receive anything, they're lost. Do you hear that? So you have to know as a husband, what do I give my wife? I come home, I hear a great class, right? So I'm gonna give to my wife this class, right? But maybe that's not what she's interested in. Not the type of idea which speaks to her. Not that type of idea which interests her. It's not gonna relate to her, right? But if I see my job is to give to her, to teach, to give guidance to, so I'm going to think, like, what's the type of idea that's right for my wife to hear? Can we hear that? Yeah. And I'm not going to just blow her away. Just like any class you're in, imagine that experience. I know the experience. You're in a class, I had a teacher who used to speak for 2 hours. He doesn't hear 2 hours to hear a brilliant person speak for 2 hours, and you don't know what he's talking about. It's like hell, That's what it's like, So sometimes you come home, you're all excited. Oh, I went to this class. Think for a second. This is the person that God gave me that I have to give to. And what I learned from a class, what I read, is important to her. And she has something specific to learn from me that she's not going to learn from any other person in the world. I better think what I'm telling her. Okay? Don't overdo it. Three, you have to live in her world. You have to really think, what does my wife need? Right? If I'm really here to give to her and to take care of her and be responsible for her, so I have to go into her world a little bit. What moves her? What's interesting her? I don't care about drapes. They don't interest me. Right? But it does interest her. And my job is to take care of her. And if she spent 3 hours thinking about the drapes and I just say, whatever you get, honey, is fine with me. So you're hurting her world because she cares about the drapes and you're there to give to her and you have to give her support in her decision about the drapes. I got blue and not yellow. That you don't care about it? This is going to change everything. Look at, And that's in, support and compliments, right? That's very big. Same thing. Women want compliments more than men do. You got it? That's the same. It's all coming to the same point. Why does a woman need compliments? She needs compliments. She needs them. She lives off of them, right? So if I see myself, I'm a giver to her, I say, and I respect her need. I don't look down at it. I'm not contemptuous about it like we spoke the other day. And I see that she needs compliments. I'm going to give her compliments. This is her need, right? Do you know that there's a halacha? There's a law in Judaism that a husband's job is to be happy on festivals, on Sukkot, on Passover, on Shavuot. There's a halacha. There's a biblical commandment, according to most sources in the way we look at it, to be happy. And not only do you have to make your wife happy, you have to buy your wife a gift before you have. She doesn't have to buy you a gift. Oh, what happened to you have to buy her a gift before the holidays. That is a biblical commandment to buy your wife gifts before Yom Tov. Give her what she needs. Okay? Four.
I thought you're supposed to do that all the time.
That's a good advice, but it's not necessarily a biblical commandment. You understand? Because
right.
Here is a specific thing. Because you have to, she has to be, you have to be happy on Passover. You have to make her happy on Passover. And the way she's happy with gifts. That's something a woman needs. So if I'm seeing myself, I'm a giver to her. I respect the fact that she needs. Just like I give you examples. Sometimes I could be like, I don't want to deal with questions, right? But if my students are asking me a question about something I said, because they want to understand, because I'm giving to them this knowledge, so I have to obviously answer them. It's not like someone running into me at a wedding when I'm busy. It's a different relationship. There's a relationship of me giving to them and them receiving from me, so I view what they need from me in a whole different way. Make sense? Will you hear it?
Right.
Yeah? It's not I'm not annoyed. I have patience. I have time for that, because that is my positioning in this relationship. Someone's thumb is nagging me at a wedding. Not that it happens. I'm just saying. So I have less responsibility to him to answer his silly question, theoretically. Yeah, can we hear that?
Yeah, it's very interesting, because now I don't want to divert it, but
yeah.
In the series of rabbis that we've had and excellent teachers, some have focused more on giving over the lesson without answering the questions, where others have been more open to
answering the
actually
question.
Listening to
right.
What we know where our needs were
yeah.
and addressing
yeah.
that. You know what I'm talking about, Michelle?
Interesting. That's interesting,
but it's a mindset.
Interesting. That's a great point. Very interesting. That's a very good point. Okay. Now, four. Don't focus. Listen, I'm a regular person. I get a lot from my wife, like I said, and I'm into getting from my wife, right? But what's your focus when I'm looking at this relationship? Is my focus what I can get or what I can give? How do I look at it? What I can get out of it or what I can give? Same thing like you said, which teacher? I'm telling you, this is advice from a friend, unsolicited, right? Unpaid for public service announcement, right? Look for the teachers who care about you more than they care about their egos, you know? You can learn from people who have egos, you can learn from people, but if my focus is that you're going to give to me, then I'm off as a teacher, because at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you what's good for me, because my interest is what's good for me, not what's good for you. You hear it? So look for those people. So the same thing, be that person for your wife. Your focus is on her. I want, just like God, what's God's focus? What he's going to get? God's focus is what he's going to give, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do it. And embrace the fact, right? Embrace the fact that God put you in this place where you can be such an ultimate giver. We don't appreciate that, because the world is so into taking. You know, they say iPhone. You heard that one? iPhone, mm-hmm. iPad. Then finally they have this game called Wii. But how do you spell it? W?
I.
You know, finally we got to the word Wii, but how do you spell it? I. It's all me. Bisli in Hebrew. Bisli, it's all me. So we don't know what it is anymore to be givers in a certain way. But here, this is the ultimate relationship. Even when we say, what do you want? You want to be a giver in life, you want to be a taker? Of course everybody's going to say they want to be a giver. So now you have the ultimate position of someone who's with you the whole time. You're only full with her taking from you and receiving from you. And you have this wonderful person to give to. And you don't want to embrace that? You have to embrace that, right? Now, realize this is a deeper one. Five, realize your wife will only want to receive from you if you aren't critical of her. Huh? Right? If I see myself as I have to give to my wife, so if I'm critical of her and she feels my critique all the time, she's not going to want to receive from me. You ever have a teacher you felt didn't like you? You know, most teachers I had in my life liked me, but I remember a few that didn't. Yeah. I don't want to take from him. You know, ugh, I don't want to hear him. You critical of me? You down on me? It's impossible to really receive correctly from someone. Help your wife be a good receiver, by not being critical of her. Six. We have two more. This is a good one. When you have a fight, realize she is naturally hurting more than you are. Now, it doesn't mean if she said stronger words than you did, I'm not talking about a clear rule. I'm talking about, you know, you spoke on one level, she spoke on one level, same level, right? Yeah? So who comes out of the fight more bruised? Again, I'm not talking about if she really, you know, she pulled her best punches. So then it could be you can be, obviously. But I'm talking about where you had the same level of talk. Same level of comment, same level of whatever was hurtful. She's going to hurt more than you are. Does that make sense? Why is that? What does that show you about how the world works, right? Imagine if you, in your student days, if there was a teacher you really looked up to, a professor you really admired, right? I'm not talking about a teacher you didn't admire. There's a teacher you admired, looked up to, and you had a fight with him. So where does that leave you? Who feels worse coming out of the thing? You feel worse because you're in the taking position. You're in the, that's a vulnerable position. The professor's not in a vulnerable position. If I have a fight with a student, of course he's going to feel worse. I go home and you know, my whole life, as much as he's into my teaching, so now that shakes his world. So if I see myself as I'm a giver, I'm the mashpia, I'm the one, you know, giving to her, so of course she's going to be hurt more. I like that. This is a strong language. This one was definitely, and I don't necessarily suggest you say all this over to your wives. It could be it's going to turn them off. They're going to think I'm a crazy rabbi. So don't, you know, use your discretion. But one of my guides said something to me when I was getting married and helped me. He said, your wife is like a daughter. Yeah, your wife is like a daughter. That's what he said to me. Your wife is like a daughter. You know, how would I look at it if I argue with my daughter? You know, I have three daughters. They're all great. But, you know, they're all so vulnerable against me. You know, I'm 44. I'm older. I'm a confident man, you know, etc. We could have an intellectual conversation, but I'm going to put them down. They're going to put me down. So I'll be angry at them because they didn't honor their father, right? But it's not going to, it's not going to sting me the same way. I could get into their core, say something nasty. How nasty could they really be to me, you know? They can't be all that nasty to me. Whatever they said, I've heard it, I've thought it, other people have said it, you know? But I'm going to go and tell them, you know, you're stupid, you know? It's going to crush them. It's going to crush them. That's how I was a daughter. So your wife, in a certain way, is like a daughter, right? She's dependent on you. She needs you. More than you need her, more than you depend on her. Now, feminism, let's call it by its name. Feminism has made this type of ideas unpopular. I mean, that's really why am I scared to say it? Because the world is so affected by feminism today, so like, women aren't women anymore, men aren't men anymore. But it used to be like, this is how everybody thought like this in a certain way. You know, Torah had penetrated it. I'm not saying feminism was all bad and everything that was going on was great back then. Of course it was, and of course a lot of things. But on the other hand, a lot of like modern movements that come, just like communism in its time, and just like all these things, fascism in its time, we all look back and say, oh, that's such a terrible thing. One day we're going to look back and we're going to realize how much feminism thought the way we are, and how many women are running away from their real nature, right? And how many men are running away from their real nature. Men want to feel honor from their wives. They want to feel like they're in charge. They want to wear the pants in the family in a certain way. And women want to be taken care of. This is the Jewish belief. Deep down, a woman wants to be taken care of. She wants to be loved, right? But feminism says to them, don't you want to be loved by your husband? Don't be dependent on him. Don't give him the sense that he's on top. You understand? But that's not, that causes us to run away from our real reality. Can we hear it? Hear what I'm saying? Okay. One last point. We're finishing up. Be patient in the fact that your wife is emotional. Right? I'm a very logical guy. I don't like emotion. You know what I'm saying? I'm an emotional person also, but I don't like dealing with a topic in an emotional way. I always say to my wife, like, give me the facts. Then afterwards you give me the emotions. Let's hear what happened. Let me hear the facts. Right? We're facts. You all seem like pretty logical types of people to me. Like, you want to know. Yeah. So your wife is more emotional, right? Be patient with that. Be understanding of that. It's how she's built. Being a makabel, a receiver, means that you're going to be more emotional. You live in a, there's a whole other top class we give, but you live in a more theoretical, planned out, blueprinted like world. That's how naturally a man lives. If you think about all the examples we gave, the Jewish people is the light of the nations through their wisdom. God guides the world through his wisdom, right? Our job is more to take his message and to do something with it, right? The non-Jews should be affected by the Jewish people. The student ultimately is supposed to take the wisdom of the rabbi and do something with them. But that also means you're more emotional because you live in a lower type of reality. It's a little bit of a deep idea, but you're living in a lower type reality, in a more physical reality. In physicality, there's more emotion. Can you hear that? Understand, the more brilliant a person is, you can always see that he can live in a place that's above emotions. The more you live on terra firma, the more you're living on the ground, the more emotional you'll be. Right, so a woman is built, these ideas go together. Being a makabel and being emotional work the same way. So if I understand that my wife is emotional because that's totally how she's built, and part of her emotion is that's what lets her be a good receiver for me, so I'm patient of that. I can live with that. That's great. That's how she should be. Of course my student's going to be more emotional to me. And of course I, by my rabbis, are more emotional to them than they are by me. My rabbis give me a bad sense, I feel bad. right? So I'm patient of my students' emotions. I'm patient of my wife's emotions, because that's part of the whole structure of how we're built, right? There's a design, and there are materials which are there to carry out the design. The man is more, right, in our thinking, the man is more the design of things, and she's the one who's carrying out the design, right? So therefore, she's going to be more emotional. So I'm just going to quickly review those seven ideas, and we're finished, right? If we can buy this idea, I'm not telling you should buy it, but this is what I believe Judaism believes, and we should learn from the ultimate truth and the eternal truth of Torah. Have what I'm a giver. Have what to give. You know, give what's needed, not too much. Really think what her needs are. Be into your wife's needs. Support, compliments, joy. Don't focus on what you can get out of the relationship. Focus on what you can give and how great it is to be a giver. 5, realize she's only going to give to you if you're not so critical of her. 6, when you have a fight, realize, since she's in that position, that she's going to be hurt more than you are. And finally, 7, be patient of the fact that she's emotional, because that's how she's built. In a word, men are uniquely responsible for their wives. A wife is responsible for her husband, of course, also, obviously, right? Obviously. But ultimately, you're responsible for your wife. And if you noticed the part I read about contempt the other day, you remember that? What did it say? A wife, the amount of times a wife is sick over the year depends on how often her husband speaks to her with contempt. He didn't say it the other way. He didn't say that the amount of times a husband is sick depends on the amount of times the wife speaks to him contemptually. It's interesting. That was an empirical source, not, you know, nothing to do with Judaism or anything like that. But that was the way he said it, right? We have to live with and embrace and fulfill that reality, right? And if we can do that, we're almost insured to having great marriages. If we can accept our unique role in the ultimate relationship, man and woman, accept the unique role which the man has of being a giver, I'm telling you, you know what I'm saying? If you will accept, I don't speak like this usually, I'm not a bad person. If you will accept the foundations of this class, and not, God forbid, in a condescending way, only in an appreciative and a loving way, and not unintelligently speak about these things, but if you will see yourself, my job is to give this to this person, take responsibility for this person, you're almost guaranteed good shalom bayis. She will give back to you, as we say in Hebrew, kefal keflaim. She will give back to you again and again and again. That is the nature, just like we in a certain way give back to Hashem, not ultimately, because we can't affect it, but just like the Jewish people, when we see ourselves as good receivers and we receive in the right way, the other party wants to give back, she's going to want to give back to you if you're giving in the right way. But it's only if we're seeing ourselves, if we can be real men, if we can be men, as men are supposed to be, so she's going to be a woman like she's supposed to be. And if we don't give to them the way we're supposed to give to them, then it's going to be very, very hard for them to receive the way they're supposed to receive. That's what I got to say. Okay, we're going to you.
Really good. What is Shalom Bayis?
Shalom Bayis is
peace at home.
Yeah, sorry, I'm sorry.
No.